Ethnew had regained her footing. A needle of fire, so bright that it hurt my eyes, lashed into Ethnew's body at the waist, where she had to twist and bend, and where the armor just couldn't have been as thick. It drew a hiss of discomfort and annoyance from her, and she whirled a spear and smashed back at my grandfather with more lightning. The old man got a shield up in time, but Christos had been a half heartbeat slow. He was flung to one side, burning, body going limp and ragdoll in the violence of the explosion. Then, as my grandfather recovered, Ethnew bounded forward, superhumanly agile, even mostly on one leg, and struck him with the butt end of the spear. My grandfather was a quarterstaff fighter with lifetimes of experience, and he was in damn fine condition for a man who had seen birthdays in four different centuries. But he was about 5'6" and mortal. She was a 9-foot proto-goddess. He pulled two deflection parries he should never have survived, much less made cleanly, and then she kicked him with her wounded leg. She didn't break his ribs. Her virtually invincible shin hit him with a low roundhouse in the hips, the side of the pelvis. It was like a kid snapping a stick. My grandfather went down hard, unmoving. The Titan's lips twisted in disgust. She bent down, tore a head from the corpse with about as much trouble as me plucking a grape, and flung it at the archive. Her aim was perfect. The girl was just struggling up out of the mud when the flying head hit her at the top of her sternum and hammered her back down. Hell's bells. There was a bounding sound in the darkness, and River Shoulders flew through the air at Ethnew. She slammed at him with a bolt of lightning, but the bespeckled Sasquatch had evidently watched some home improvement videos or something. He was still airborne as the lightning hit, and he had timed it perfectly. There was nowhere for the current to latch on and ground out, and he passed through the bolt of lightning with little more consequence than some of his hair being set on fire. The flaming Sasquatch hit Ethnew like a runaway truck, hitting a runaway truck barrier. The Titan simply dug a heel into the ground and accepted River Shoulders' charge. She arrested it completely. Then she got a hold of his good arm and dislocated it with a twist. River Shoulders screamed. Lightning struck. A hawk cried in fury, and then a goddamn grizzly bear fell out of the night sky and onto Ethnew's head. Don't care how titanic you are. No one expects an orbital drop grizzly. The bear's fangs and claws raked at the Titan, leaving smoldering, glowing marks on her armor, but she simply hammered the thing with the butt of her spear until it dropped away, stunned. She swung the spear like a club, screaming in mindless rage, and broke the bear's back like it was made of balsa wood. The bear screamed in pain and fear, and suddenly listens to wind lay where the bear had been, prostrate and racked with obvious agony. In seconds, she had killed or crippled virtually every other major hitter on the field. Hell's bells. Divine combat, heavy-duty magical combat, physical combat. We were playing rock, paper, scissors with the Titan, and each of us could only do one. She could always pull scissors to our paper, paper to our rock, rock to our scissors. And if she got bored, she could always pull out even better scissors, rock, or paper. God, from what I'd seen and heard about her, she wasn't even an experienced warrior. She was a noob. She was simply a power, an order of magnitude beyond anything facing her. And she was beating us. But she was breathing hard now. She was paying a price for her victory. How do you eat a Titan? One bite at a time. Sonya and Butters didn't speak to each other. Simultaneously, they simply flew forward at the Titan as we finally broke through the troops and had a shot at her. Butters went right, Sonya went left. The light of the swords could have illuminated a stadium. But here's the thing about the swords, the thing no one had told me, that I'd had to learn through years of observation. The swords could work miracles when it came to facing off against the forces of darkness, but it wasn't their job to decide the fight. The swords and the knights weren't given the power to crush their enemies wholesale. They existed to level the field, to create a choice where one wouldn't have otherwise been possible. The swords gave the knights an absolute power to contest the will of darkness, but the swords could not give them victory. Swords didn't do that. Swords have never done that. Victory comes from the mind, the heart, and the will, from people. What is the sword compared to the hand that wields it? All around us, the battle hung in the balance, poised. It could have gone one way or the other, and a feather's touch could have made the difference in which way it fell. I lifted a hand. I had retooled the top of my staff weeks before. It had been fit very closely, so close that you couldn't see the seam when it was closed. The Svartals had used lasers when I commissioned it. I unscrewed a 4-inch section from the top of the staff, where a simple bolt and socket had been set. Then I drew the dagger from my belt. My heartbeat thundered in my ears. The handle of the dagger had been set with the same size socket as the cap of the staff. I set it on the end and spun it, and the well-oiled bolt whirled into place and locked with a simple hinged hook over one side of the dagger's hilt to keep it from unscrewing. Then I gathered power. The runes of the weapon's half flared into green-gold light that pulsed in intensity along with the thunder of my heart. The knife at the head didn't burst into flame or anything. It just became colder. The edges harder, sharper, more real. So real that anything that you looked at in the background beyond the spear seemed blurry, symbolic, transitory. That weapon carried reality woven into it, dark and hard and unalterable. I felt my will and the weapon's head vibrating in harmony along with my heartbeat. I slammed the butt end of the spear of destiny on the ground, and green and gold fire leapt up in a ring around me. The impact vibrated against my hand, and I felt it go out into the ground through the soles of my sneakers. I could sense the substance of the spear stirring, forming, almost awakening. It drew some of its energy from me. My heart rate started to climb.
"Hey, Regina George!"
I called, and my voice echoed over the field as if on loudspeakers. Thrum, thrum, went the power of the spear. Thrum, 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 thrum. Ethne's head whipped toward me, her eye focused on the spear, wide and alarmed, while Butters and Sonya rushed to flank her.
"Yeah," I said, and started wearily forward. "Enough foreplay. Time for the main event."
Chapter 33. Sonya and Waldo and I rushed the last Titan, and Chicago hung in the balance. Around us, armies clashed drunkenly. Marcone's amateurs fought like hell beside mine. They didn't fight well, but they fought hard. And when they went down, they did not go alone. Etri's people were simply terrifying. Blurs that moved across the battle, striking from almost complete invisibility, and could sink into the earth and emerge from it anywhere they wanted at will. If we'd had a legion of Svartals, we wouldn't have needed anyone else. But they weren't a numerous people, and they were directing their efforts to spearheading the attack of the relief force to join up with the Winter Lady's cohorts. Lara's people fought beside them. Watching the two groups work together was like some kind of bizarre outtake from the Cirque du Soleil. Lara's fighters sailed through the air with the greatest of ease, taking 30-foot strides in great leaping bounds, moving almost weightlessly, their shroud armor fluttering and snapping. As I watched, a wavery figure of a Svartov emerged from the earth and dragged a minor Fomor's ankles into the ground. Even as it did, a white figure flashed by, spinning a blade on the end of a pole in a smooth arc and killed the enemy sorcerer as easily as a beast at slaughter, and I saw the unmistakable silvery eyes of Lara Wraith as she went by. She snapped the weapon up in a salute to the Svartov warrior as she passed, then engaged a band of war beasts and their handlers, only to have half a dozen more wavery figures emerge from the ground behind her foes as they surrounded her, a counter-ambush that annihilated the bunch. Lara's eyes and mine met for a dangerous second, and she immediately shifted her direction, bounding across the savage battlefield like a fluttering pale spirit toward Ethnew's back. Sonya, as tough as butters and more athletic, got to Ethnew first. The Titan lashed out with a spear's head, sending it whipping through an arc that would have severed Sonya's neck if he hadn't dropped into a slide. He came through with the old cavalry saber held in both hands and struck at the Titan's other foot. Ethnew knew the power of the swords at this point, and she dodged out of the way, forcing her weight onto her wounded leg and sending her down to a knee. Butters, going by the other side, whipped Phidolacius through a circle, and Ethnew struck him right on the chin with the butt end of her stolen spear with a simple lightning-fast jab while he did it. Which is why you shouldn't learn fighting moves from the movies. Butters went flying back into the mud and didn't move. Half the light on the field went out. Sonya regained his feet behind the Titan and charged as she began to rise, the head of the spear orienting on the unmoving form of the Knight of Faith. Before she could finish him, Sonya slammed into her back and smashed her down into the mud. Ethnew twisted on the way down and hammered an awkward blow at Sonya with one arm. The Knight of Hope caught the blow on the blade of Asparachus. And again, a Titan screamed. Maybe 2,000 individuals from both armies simply collapsed to the ground, howling in agony as a wave of psychic pain washed out of the Titan. It felt like my arm had been set on fire. But it sure as hell wasn't the first time. This time, I'd been ready, bracing myself against the Titan's suffering, and surged through it like a swimmer breaking through the first wave at the beach. I closed the last few yards, slammed my feet down hard to brace them, and thrust the spear at the Titan's face. Ethnew swept her stolen spear from left to right like a windshield wiper, and she was fast. Way faster than she'd looked when I hadn't been within stab range. I tried to slip the parry, but was just too slow, and she batted the spear aside, seized Sonya by a handful of his mail shirt, and threw him at me with about as much energy as a runaway golf cart. We both went down in a heap, hard enough to take breath and cause stars and comets to whirl in front of us. Asparachus spun out of Sonya's hands. There was blood on it. Titan's blood. Ethnew glanced at the smoldering pile of what was mostly corpses, their body fat blazing in flames where one of the bolts of lightning or flying shards of power had struck incidental targets. With the head of the spear, she flicked the Sword of Hope, smeared with blood too red to be real, into the fire. And then she thrust her wounded arm into it. Her expression twisted with pain as the fire scorched and boiled the wound. The light of the sword died. Hundreds screamed with the Titan's pain. And the world suddenly got a whole hell of a lot darker.
Trinkets of the Redeemer, she snarled, her voice absolutely bubbling with hatred.
She rose, whipping her burned arm out of the fire. The wound hadn't been a very big one, even struck with Asparachus, and she had cauterized it closed, apparently. Though the surface of her bronze skin was untouched, the flesh inside the wound had been charred like meat on a grill.
Maggots crawling on our beautiful world, infesting it, humans.
Hate seethed through her, vibrated off her like heat from a fire. The Titan twisted her face in a rictus of concentration. And the eye kindled a scarlet life and began to brighten.
Dim, Sonya muttered as the Titan turned toward us.
The scarlet warlight of the eye let me at least see Sonya.
The big man was lying on his back. Something in the area of his collarbone was just wrong under the skin. It wasn't shaped like humans were supposed to be shaped. His voice was thready, and he panted as though each inhalation was of pure fire.
Was pretty sure that would work.
Get her, I said. Not much of a plan.
No, for next time, need better plan.
I blinked and looked at the Russian as the red glare brightened. Next time? He grinned at me, though he couldn't move, in sheer mad defiance. Super cool magical pokey stick or not, I didn't have what it took to stand up to power on the order of magnitude of the Eye of Balor. My heaviest magical punch was nowhere close to what my grandfather could throw, and that hadn't gotten through her armor either. Even if I was a lot better, even if I threw it out as a death curse, the best spell I had wouldn't surpass what the old man could do. And I still hadn't gotten to her blood. If I was going to bind the Titan, I needed that. And I needed her closer to the water. The spear quivered with power, and I could feel the sheer metaphysical mass of the thing, its utter reality. It was, in many ways, just a spear, but it was a spear to everything. If I could stick it in the Titan, she would bleed. But she was 20 rough feet away, and I'd have to get close enough to even have a shot at hitting her. And she'd have to be so slow that merely human reflexes could manage the task. None of which was going to happen before she unleashed the Eye. But I shoved myself to my feet, spear in hand, brought forth my shield, and stepped forward in front of the fallen Knight of Hope. No particular reason to do it, not a lot of hope to be had. The enemy had come at us out of nowhere, far stronger than we had expected, and we'd done everything we could. It hadn't been enough. I faced the Titan's hate and fury and acknowledged that I couldn't beat it. But I figured I could die as well as Hendrix had, on my feet, face to the foe, between her and my friend. And 20 yards away, a swirl of battle stirred, and I saw One Eye's shadowy form on the ground where he'd fallen. He lifted his head. He opened his eye. It gleamed like a smoldering coal in the shadow. And Odin, father of the Aesir, spoke, his voice a deep resonance that shook the air with gentle power. Gungnir. I knew the translation of the weapon's name, a bit of useless trivia that is stuck in my head. Swayer. A rune burst into scarlet light upon the spear's blade. And, like a snake, the weapon of the gods the Titan had stolen turned in her hand, whipping about with lightning speed. As it did, runes burst into light all along the length of the blade and haft alike, suddenly blazing with energy. And the weapon plunged with vicious, absolute precision into the Eye of Balor. A wall of light hit me. I don't mean it was bright. I mean, I got hit with a physical force the likes of which I had seldom experienced. If I hadn't had the shield up and ready, it would have obliterated me. Shield or not, I was flung to the ground, and I fought to keep myself between the torrent and the fallen knights. The world was white. Sound was just a high-pitched, endless tone. Reality was pain. When the world came back again, Ethnew was on one knee. Her right hand rested on the ground. Half of her skull was burned to the bone. Black. The eye glowered within its socket. Flames and semi-solid plasma gathered around it. The arm that had been holding Gungnir was gone, just gone, right around the elbow. The flesh burned to a withered stump. Blinding light seethed from what looked like cracks on the eye's surface, and stars and stones. The damn creature lifted her maimed head. Half of her face was untouched, and she focused her gaze, equal parts mind-numbing beauty and screaming horror, and brought the eye to bear on me.
Lara rose from behind that hideous head, leaping from a good 50 feet off. She sailed through the air with a grace that was more like that of an insect than a bird, spun as she came, and delivered a kick that could have inspired poetry to the back of the Titan's skull. She put everything into it as she came, the full power of a White Court vampire unleashing her stored strength all at once. Lara could have driven that kick through a battleship's hull. She hit the Titan in the base of the skull. The kick couldn't hurt Ethneu. But the eye flew out of its socket and landed on the muddy ground, a little bigger than a softball, glowing with sullen, rising fire. A fire that had the potential to consume anything that was, including Ethneu. The Titan clutched at her maimed face, and her expression suddenly became subsumed with terror. She lurched for the eye. So did I. So did Lara. We hit in a tangled confusion of bodies. The eye skittered away. It bounced and rolled and came to a stop against the boots of Hendrix's corpse. And John Marcone popped out of the shadows near Hendrix's body, seized it, gave me a ferocious glare, and sprinted toward Lake Michigan. Ethneu thrust her good hand at me, but Lara was quick. She kicked at the Titan's arm, deflecting some of the power of the blow, and it only sent me rolling across the muddy ground.
Go!
Lara screamed, her eyes as bright as mirrors. She whipped her weapon, I think the Japanese call it a naginata, at the Titan, to no more effect than leaving sullen red lines of heat upon the titanic bronze coating Ethneu's form. Ethneu batted Lara aside like a rag doll and rose, only to stumble as Lara's shroud armor writhed off the vampire like a living thing, like some kind of bizarre invertebrate from the deep sea, and wrapped around the Titan's knees, binding them together. Ethneu fell back down again and was forced to briefly struggle against the living cloth. Lara, naked as a jaybird, her pale skin gleaming, almost glowing, scrambled to one side and thrust her weapon at the Titan's fingers, trying to keep them from getting hold of the binding armor.
She wants the eye!
Lara screamed.
Go, Harry!
The spear felt heavy in my hands. It still had the power to hurt the Titan. But even with a backup of the winter mantle, I was too battered and slow to get through to her. And I needed to get her to the water anyway. Marcone knew the plan, and he'd been thinking about it harder than me. So I flung myself after him, plunging out of the clear air around the battlefield and into the choking, smoky haze over the city. It was getting hard to tell where the park had been. The ground had been torn apart by the forces unleashed there. We got to where the footbridge had stood and found that Ethneu had used the eye to facilitate the crossing of the avenue below for her army. She had blown the bridge and the retaining walls into slopes of rubble, and the area beyond was even worse. Streets, buildings, trees, light poles, everything that had not been able to flee had suffered destruction, as if she had risen from the lake and pounded everything in her line of sight to rubble with the power of the eye. The retaining wall beside the water was just kind of a really, really rocky beach now. I caught up to Marcone as he scrambled across the rough ground, running wherever possible. When I finally drew up beside him, he increased his pace, and I was hard-pressed to stay with him. Granted, he didn't look like he'd been through as much physical discomfort as I had that night, but even so, he moved damn well, and like he'd been to places like this before. "Can we use the weapon?" he asked in a terse tone as we ran. Behind us, Ethneu let out a scream of rage, and there was a sound like metal cables tearing. Then she screamed again, and it was closer. "Maybe I could," I panted, "if I had a lifetime to study it, but probably not. Something like that isn't meant for mortals." "Then we have no other option," Marcone said. "What do you need for the binding?" "Her blood," I said. Then I started tearing at the bag I'd carried tied shut on my belt for most of the night. Ethneu screamed again, closer. She wasn't moving much faster than we were. She'd had one hell of a night, too. Hell's bells, for all I knew, she was using echolocation. She had every other damned advantage.
I take it your weapon can accomplish that? He asked.
I don't know, I said honestly.
We'd reached the beach by then and clambered down the slope of broken rock to the edge of the water. But if it was good enough for the Son of God, I figure it's in the right league.
Marcone's eyes widened. One of his hands twitched.
And the adults let you have it? There was a clatter of rock on rock behind us.
There's not much justice in the world, I said. This thing might work, it might not. It takes some pretty serious power to hurt her, like angel-level power.
The swords, he said.
Butters is new, I said. He did something without thinking. This is what we've got.
In the haze, in which visibility had dropped to maybe 30 feet, I heard something breathing, the bubble of a slight snarl on every exhale. Marcone crouched, tense.
Do you at least have a gun? I asked. Maybe you can distract her.
I have a knife, Marcone said.
Just like a gangster, I said, brings a knife to an apocalypse fight.
Marcone gave me a level look and then said, in a much more conversational tone,
honestly, Dresden, if you used your mind to have as much as your mouth, you'd be running the place by now.
He held up the eye and spoke patiently. I have what she wants. I will distract her. He clambered over several yards away from me and fell silent, watching the murky shadows. I wanted to say something back about how he was a running mouth, but instead I fell silent, gathered up some of my power, and shaped it into the mildest, softest veil I could around me. Too much power in it, and Ethneu might become aware of the energies in motion. She was wounded now, hunting, hurting, furious, frightened, like one of us. She'd focused on retrieving the eye, focused on securing its power, on wiping away her enemies, who were everyone forever. I wouldn't matter unless I got between her and the eye. So I stood still and silent and let the haze of the battle and the more subtle effort of my will gather around me, and waited. It wasn't long. Ethneu came down the slope on all fours, crawling with perfect grace and mangled limbs like a wounded spider, holding herself up on the stump of her arm as easily as if she'd been born that way. Her burned face was sort of seething with some kind of thick mist or steam as her body fought the injuries Odin had inflicted. Her eye locked on Marcone, and she let out a low, cackling exhalation.
The mortal who thinks himself a lord, the Titan purred.
Fool,
Marcone replied by way of greeting, his tone polite and pitched to carry loudly.
What?
Ethneu demanded.
If you had a mind, Marcone said, you would have used restraint. You would have arisen from the water with no warning to anyone. You would have unleashed a wave of expendable troops on the city, blown down a building or two, and returned to the sea to watch the havoc unfold. He shook his head.
I will simply never understand the need some people seem to feel to be proven correct in front of their enemies. It's quite childish.
I blinked. Was Marcone talking smack?
Give me what is mine, mortal, Ethneu snarled, and I will kill you swiftly.
Your negotiating skills would seem to need work as well, Marcone added.
Behind us, there was a series of roaring detonations from back by the park. Sorcery, maybe. I was an idiot. An exhausted, terrified idiot. Marcone didn't do anything just to be doing it. He was providing cover for me. So I started moving whenever they spoke, as soft and quiet as I knew how. It wasn't as quiet as usual. I'd just been too battered. Even now, I didn't feel pain exactly. Mostly my body just seemed very confused about what the hell was going on. One moment it would be too hot, the next freezing, and nothing felt like it was moving quite right, so my balance kept wobbling. The winter mantle had been stretched to its limits, or rather, it had stretched me to mine. It felt like I was getting closer to game over than I had before.
You aren't anyone, the Titan said. You're nothing, just an animal. An animal near the top of its class on one little world.
And yet, I walk where I will, Marcone said. I sleep where and when I please. I eat when I hunger. I choose what to make of my life. I am free. I crept closer.
Who are you?
Marcone asked back, his voice ringing defiance. A daughter unloved by her monstrous father, sold and traded like a horse, hiding in a dark cave with her useless hangers-on for millennia, and now lashing out with her daddy's gun. He shook his head and bounced the eye in his hand.
It appears that it is better to be a mortal than a titan these days.
She crept closer, vibrating with tension.
Give me, she seethed, the eye.
Marcone stared at the Titan and appeared to choose his words the way a surgeon would his implements.
Be a good girl, he said, and go get it.
With an expression of absolute nonchalant contempt, he tossed the smoldering eye over his shoulder and into the waters of Lake Michigan, which instantly began to boil. I was close. The Titan bared her teeth in a hideous grimace, enraged beyond making a sound, beyond even attempting communication, and came at him. A rock rolled beneath my ankle. Without an instant's hesitation, Ethneu spun and flung a rock at me with her good hand. I saw it coming and felt like a moron. Ethneu had had no reason to have a conversation with Marcone. She'd known I was there all along, but she hadn't known exactly where. So she'd been using the slight sound of my own movements to get a fix on my location. The rock was enough to give me away. But Marcone had struck her where it hurt, in the feelings. What he'd said had been defiant enough, disrespectful enough, to send her into a rage. She could have flicked that stone at me carefully, like a dart thrower, beamed me in the head, and that would have been that. But she didn't. She threw it hard, sidearm, like a major league pitcher, her rage giving the motion away so that I had an instant to counter her. I turned my shoulder into the stone, and it hit me like a sledgehammer. My coat stopped the worst of it, which meant that all I got was a broken arm. Left one, middle of my forearm. The rock shattered against me, and if the coat kept me alive, it still felt like I'd been kicked by a particularly powerful and hostile horse. I went down with a cry. My body felt like a car that didn't want to start, and my limbs filled with a bone-crushing weariness. The toll the night had put on me was becoming physically insupportable. I slammed a hand to the ground to push myself up, or tried to. The actual movements my body performed seemed a lot feebler than I had intended. But I got back up just as the Titan slithered across the rocks to Marcone. Steel gleamed in the Baron's hand. Maybe a 4-inch blade, black composite handle, modern diver's knife, very plain. Very much not epic or apocalyptic. Marcone stabbed at her. A child would have done better against a professional wrestler. Ethneu's good arm blurred. She seized him by the throat, lifted him with no noticeable effort, gave her arm a little bob, a little twist, and broke his neck. I watched Marcone jerk and go limp. She rose to a knee, her good leg planted in the boiling water, and threw the corpse away like an empty beer can. The Baron of Chicago landed on the rocks, boneless and broken. A roar went up from the battlefield behind us. The blue beam of light rising into the night like a vague glowing moonbeam above the embattled forces of the Winter Lady flickered and dimmed. Ethneu let out a bubbling, almost disbelieving laugh. Then she prowled like a beast down into the roiling water and slipped beneath it. I could see her reaching out a hand toward the light of the eye. I staggered over to Marcone's body,
broken neck didn't kill you right away. Nobody ought to die alone. And when I got there, he sat up. I fell back with a manly, high-pitched scream. Marcone's head was twisted way too far around to one side. He rolled his neck as if stretching out. There was a series of hideous little pops in his neck, and then he shook his head back and forth as if easing a cramp, and his neck just unbroke. Marcone gave me a bland look and held up his knife. Its blade was covered in blood, too bright red to be real. I blinked and stared at the knife, then up at him. What the actual fuck? I asked. I felt my eyes widen. Celestial power, they had said, to get through the titanic bronze. Or infernal. Marcone's eyes wrinkled at the corners in genuine amusement.
Honestly, Dresden, did you think I'd stop with the title?
And in the center of his forehead, his skin flushed and stirred, and then began to glow in a lambent purple light in the shape of an angelic rune. A pair of glowing violet eyes etched in light opened on his forehead, just above his own eyebrows. And with a little ripple, black thorns that would have been at home on particularly wild roses began to emerge from his skin in a pattern on his face and stirring beneath his shirt.
I believe you needed this, he said, offering me the handle of the knife.
And I believe time is short. I took the knife, staring. Sir, gentleman, Johnny Marcone, Baron of Chicago, Knight of the Blackened Denarius, the bearer of the Master of Sorcery, Thorned Namshiel, calmly rose and divested himself of the pirate bandoliers. He reached up to undo his tie and tossed it to one side. Then he loosened his collar so that the thorns in his skin weren't pressing on it, and unbuttoned the shirt, evidently to make himself more comfortable there, too. The coin of Thorned Namshiel, one of a set of 30, rested on an almost unbearably fine silver chain against Marcone's chest.
I believe Namshiel and I can play for a draw against her, he said, but not for long.
You must complete the binding as quickly as you can.
I said, but...
Marcone turned and slapped me.
Hell's bells, I spat. Focus, he snarled. I know it hurts. I know what you've lost. I know you're tired. But you and I are all that stands between that creature and this city.
I clenched my jaw.
If we fail now, he continued, everyone who has been lost for nothing. Your people and mine.
The water of Lake Michigan flared with red light. Gulp. Ethnew had reclaimed the eye.
Dresden!
Marcone hissed, giving my chest a little push. Are you going to sit there while that happens? I thought of Murphy's body, silent, small, back in the bean. I thought of my little Maggie in her pajamas, small and vulnerable. I snarled at my sluggish brain, forced the gears to start grinding again. Then I met the eyes of tiger-souled John Marcone and said, no. He bared his teeth, and the weird purple eyes smiled. Marcone rose, turned to face the water, and started spinning off defensive spells, different ones, from each hand, simultaneously. Evidently, a few years in private tuition with an angelic master of magic as a teacher really got some results. Maybe if there was a later, I needed to get back to school myself. The very thought was exhausting. Christ, it had really been a very long day. A titan was about to send the world into a new dark age while knights of winter and hell tried to get in her way. Several queens of fairy had been beaten bloody. Half a pantheon of supernatural terrors had smashed one another to pieces in Millennium Park, and they'd knocked buildings down like Legos while they did it. Double dragon boss fight beside Hell Knight Marcone now? Yeah, sure. Why not?
Chapter 34 Ethneu didn't arise from the waters of Lake Michigan so much as explode from them, her raw power and agility belying her mangled limbs. Stars and stones, she was functionally halfway to being a quadriplegic, biplegic, I guess, and she still moved like a damn gymnast. Marcone began muttering in a language I didn't recognize and pointed a finger at the ground 20 yards away and to his left. He indicated another position to his right with his other hand. At a point equidistant from the first, said something, and there was a crackling sound in the air like broken wind chimes, maybe. Ethneu came out of the water with the eye already bursting forth in a tidal roar of red energy, lashing out unstoppably at Marcone. Marcone simply stepped to his left and vanished into a chorus of broken wind chimes, reappearing at the point he'd pointed to with his left hand, clear of the beam. Ethneu shrieked in rage, slewing the gaze of the eye around wantonly, though the motion was slower than it should have been and seemed to take physical effort from her straining neck muscles as she swept her gaze around, searching for Marcone. She spotted him with another scream, but he simply took a second step, vanishing from the first point of the triangle he'd indicated, and appeared in the second in another shower of clinking crystal sounds. Holy crap! Direct point-to-point translocation was something the White Council kept in a section called Highly Theoretical and Dangerous Magic in the Wizard's Library at the complex in Edinburgh. I knew, because years ago when I'd asked about it, I'd been put on the no-access list for the entire section. Which, well, to be fair, probably wasn't entirely unwise. Ethneu spent the energy of the eyes blast while Marcone played freaking peekaboo with her, using magic I wouldn't care to touch until I had another 40 or 50 years to practice, at least. And while Marcone kept her busy, I got to work. I grounded the spear next to me. Working with one hand was a pain, but my left hand wasn't cooperating very well and couldn't do much more than wave vaguely and grasp Marcone's bloodied knife. I opened the bag I'd tied closed, rested my palm on the skull inside for a second, and said, "Bob!" The eyes of the skull kindled to light, even as I held them up so that he could see what was happening.
"Did Radio Mab go off the air? Is it over? Are we... Oh, my freaking God!"
Beyond us, Ethneu seized a boulder the size of a basketball and smashed at Marcone with it. The gangster stood there calmly while the rocks shattered on a dim violet aura around him, the pieces flinging themselves violently back into Ethneu's face.
"Oh, hell no," Bob declared.
I had to reach across to fumble in my opposite pocket with my good hand and withdraw the crystal I'd brought from Demon Reach for the purpose. It flickered deep down with the faint green light of the crystals in the catacombs under the island.
"Bob," I said, "we're going to bind a titan." "Fuck that," the skull sputtered. "I'm going to Utah. Stuff like this never happens in Utah."
"Buddy," I said, turning the skull to look at me, "I need you." Bob the skull's eyelights dwindled down to little points, and he said in a tiny voice,
"Damn it."
He shuddered in my hand, and then the lights brightened again.
"Think of all the girls we'll get when we lock her up."
Such a long night.
"That's the spirit," I sighed. "Oh, I see what you did there."
"Damn it, Bob, focus," I snapped grumpily. "You're the circle, and if we survive this, you get a 24-hour pass, shore leave."
"Whoop,"
Bob whooped, and campfire sparks soared out of the skull's eye sockets and into a swiftly moving cloud in the hellish air. Ethneu recoiled from the rebounding stone, snarling in frustration, and started clubbing Marcone with one arm, the motion primal, brutal. His shields were comprehensive, if not really first class in strength, but he just kept spinning new ones off his fingers, defenses akimbo. Ethneu's furious blows would shatter the shield they struck, but by then Marcone would have spun up another one. She switched tactics, kicking a cloud of stones at him with her broken foot, which already looked steadier than it had been. Marcone had to drop a new shield low to intercept the stones, which scattered off in random directions as the spell fractured, breaking the rhythm.
He had to dive to one side before Ethneu compressed his spine into his tailbone as she surged after him, snarling. I took the bloody knife and swept it over the smoldering light of the crystal, and it flared to life as the blood of the Titan touched it. It might have been really bright, I could barely tell. The world was turning into weird shadows and odd streaks of color. My good hand was shaking hard. I drove the crystal down into some rubble so that it stood up from the ground. Then I smeared more of the Titan's blood onto the tip of the spear. My heart suddenly skittered along even faster. Thrum, 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 thrum. Marcone did something that made greasy black smoke condense into a thick, choking cloud and sent it zipping toward the Titan's face, where it clung in a wobbly bubble of impenetrable fog. The Titan swiped at it uselessly.
Namshiel, she snarled. You greasy little snake!
Marcone spoke in a different voice even as he ducked behind a chunk of fallen concrete the size of a tractor trailer. It sounded like him, mostly, only with a very formal British accent.
You haven't changed much either, darling.
In answer, Ethneu screamed and surged directly forward and threw the concrete and the rebar inside it alike. It exploded and came sloughing over Marcone in an avalanche. Marcone played a desperate move and threw a telekinetic strike at his own feet. Magic is awesome, but physics are still physics. Throw a bunch of force at the ground, and the ground throws just as much force back at you. Marcone exploded out from under the avalanche of shattering concrete, flew up at maybe a 20-degree angle, and landed a good 50 feet out into Lake Michigan. And the Titan's furious gaze immediately whipped toward me.
Filthy little thief of power,
Ethneu snarled. Spittle and foam were falling from the scullified side of her face, along with a steady patter of some kind of yellowish slime as she came skittering toward me over the stones.
I will feed you to the eye.
Bob! I screamed and seized the spear, holding its point up above me. The cloud of campfire sparks swirled in a helix up around the spear, touched the blood at the tip like a hound picking up a scent. I whirled the spear in a circle, gathering up the substance of the spirit around it along with my will, and murmured,
Vaintress Sickless.
Wind and spirit flew toward the Titan, too swiftly to be seen as more than a single blur of light that whipped thrice counterclockwise about the Titan and then settled into place, a whirling cyclone of motes of light, a solid bar of my will that encircled her.
Thrum, 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 thrum.
I sent my will into the spear, my own power flooding out along with Bob, infusing his essence, just as my will could have infused a circle of chalk or silver. Ethneu staggered as the light surrounded her, shielding her eyes, and then she let out a choking sound and screamed in denial as the circle closed around her. Wizards are the gatekeepers, the defenders of this world. Or at least we are when we're at our best. And if some immortal thing rolls in here from somewhere else, we can say something about it. We can pit our will against them. We might not win, but with a proper channel and a circle of power, we can make them stop to fight us. The circle closed on Ethneu, and suddenly I found myself pitted against the mutilated will of a Titan. There was a horrible pressure, a whole body crushing agony, as if I had suddenly blinked to the floor of the sea. And that was what it was like, with the force of that mind pressing against mine, like trying to hold off the weight of the tide. But the sea had tried to wash my mind away before now, and I knew the secret of facing the will of supernatural beings. I might be nothing but a grain of sand on the shore of that ocean, but pound as it might, the ocean couldn't destroy that grain of sand. Not if it was stubborn enough to hold together. Though the ocean might wash the sand here and there, might batter and rage at it, when the ocean's rage is gone and the waters once more serene, the sand will remain. So I took the pressure.
Though my head felt like someone was trying to squeeze my brains out through my nose, I kept my will on the spear, on the circle. The snarling rage of the furious, terrified Titan filled my head, literally. Her voice was echoing off the surface of my skull, deafening and inescapable and really, really uncomfortable.
"Mortal," she snarled, "do you think you can pit your will against mine?"
"Obviously," I muttered. "That's why you're in a circle, genius." I took a slow breath and, in that deep, echoing voice, called, "Ethneu, daughter of Balor, I bind thee." The Titan wailed and shook her head violently, spittle and slime and worse spraying everywhere. She thrashed, and suddenly there was a hideous power raking at the circle. Bob screamed in agony. The sparks began to fly apart.
"No!"
I said, and sent my will rushing into the spear, out along the stream of sparks still connected to it, like some kind of bizarre whirling lasso. I fed power and will to the familiar spirit, fighting the pressure from the Titan, binding together his immaterial substance and preventing her from tearing it apart.
"Insect!"
Ethneu hissed, flinging herself from the edge of the circle and pacing back and forth in it like a frantic big cat.
"The advantage of immortality is that one can take the time to be thorough. Do you think we did not plan for this?"
"Yeah, kind of," I said. "Or you wouldn't be stuck in my circle. Ethneu, daughter of Balor, I bind thee."
Ethneu didn't scream this time. She smiled. And then she thought at me. And the lake and everything else went away. And I found myself standing on a quiet lawn in a darkened neighborhood I knew well. I was in Michael Carpenter's front yard. The lights were out, and the sky was beginning to fill with dust and smoke and the red glare of the eye, but I could still see the moon a little. This was earlier in the evening. She was showing me a memory. And I watched as Listen and maybe 30 or 40 of his turtlenecks advanced into the yard in full tactical gear. They came in multiple stacks, heading for Michael's front door, the kitchen door, the garage, and the door to the backyard. As I watched, in a handful of seconds, the men set breaching charges on the door, blew it, and went in. Michael Carpenter, stolid in his blue plaid work shirt, was waiting for them, shotgun in hand. He wasn't really a gunfighter. He was retired now. It was over quickly. They left his body in the entry hall and walked over it. Enemies, mortal enemies, twisted people, but still people, flooded into his house to the chattering thumps of suppressed weapons. I knew there were angels on guard at Michael's house. I knew they would have burned any supernatural attacker with the fires that ravaged Sodom and Gomorrah. But these were mortals, people. Angels weren't allowed to gainsay people. Listen and his team were thorough. They must have found the safe room because charges went off again. Then some screams. Some very high-pitched screams. And gunfire. And then the four more squads filed out with the same silence with which they'd filed in. Listen stopped on the front lawn next to where I stood in the vision, lifted a radio to his mouth and said,
"Tell her the target has been cleared and confirmed. We're moving back to the shore to meet the rest of the company."
I pushed forward toward the house, toward the front door, and could see blood running from the second floor, from where the safe room was. I ran up the stairs to the hidden entrance and found it twisted and torn with the violence of the breaching charges, and behind the door, I saw them. Saw her. Charity and the Carpenter kids all lay between Maggie and the door. Even little Harry, who was almost as young as Maggie, had stood in her defense. It had been efficient. And suddenly I was standing on the shore of Lake Michigan again, cold and more brutally weary than I'd ever been, struggling against Ethne's will.
"You see, mortal,"
the Titan's voice said in my head.
"Lysan and his people scouted this target thoroughly. They planned countermeasures for all of your kind here. And they planned something in particular for you and the Winter Lady. All those targets in one place just made it too tempting."
Ethne paused, and her mental voice became poisonously sweet.
"Your child is dead. Your ally and his family are dead. They were destroyed hours ago."
My stomach dropped out.
"This is the world I bring to you, mortal."
And then she thought at me again. She showed me the world she desired. A world of blasted cities, of smoke, of tears, of screams. Blood ran in the gutters rather than water, and columns of greasy black smoke rose from altars, from temples, from shrines decorated with skulls and crusted with the blood of sacrifices.
"This is what is coming, and there is nothing you can do to stop it. Just as well that your daughter will not see it, I think. Just as well that you won't either."
And I felt her will gathering again, preparing to shatter mine. Everything felt spinny, empty. Bob let out a wordless wail. I could feel my hold on the circle weakening. I could feel the Titan beginning to burst free of the binding. "Maggie," I thought, "I'm so sorry. I should have done more. I should have been there."
"Dresden!"
Marcone screamed from the water.
"We'll never get another chance at this!"
Ethne's will began to rip mine apart. Slowly, almost sensually. I could feel her pressing against my mind, pressing inside. She found my pain and my horror, and she slithered inside while I gritted my teeth and held onto the spear for simple support to keep from falling. Thrum-thrum, thrum-thrum, thrum-thrum. Thrum-thum, thrum-thum. I couldn't get the image of my daughter's little shattered body out of my head. Ethne's savage face twisted into a hideous smile. "I should have done more, taken more measures to protect you than just leave you with Mount." My head snapped back up. I stared at her for a second, and then I clenched my teeth in a sudden wolfish smile.
"Hey, Bubbles," I said. "You forgot the dog."
Ethne's smile vanished.
"What?"
"The dog," I said. "The dog was with them. Maybe your guys could take him out, maybe not, but it wouldn't be fast. And they'd only get to my daughter over his dead body, but he's not there. Question, where is he? Answer, with my daughter. That's the only place it's possible for him to be. Ergo, she wasn't there. She was never there. In fact, none of them were there, because the dog's absence was a message to me from the person responsible. This girl I know had places to be this evening. Man, she really has been busy."
Ethne looked baffled. I took a deep breath and said,
"Honey, you're fighting fairies. It was staged for your benefit. Wouldn't be shocked if we went back there and found a bunch of bundles of wood where the bodies were."
The Titan's living eye widened.
"Lysan betrayed me,"
Ethne hissed, spitting in her fury. I stared at her for a second. For a second, I almost felt sorry for her. Then I sighed.
"Sure, that's the takeaway here," I said. "Nice knowing you."
I set my jaw, kept my will on her, and cried in a voice that echoed from the vaults of the apocalypse sky.
"Ethne, daughter of Balor, I bind thee!"
A storm hit my mind. Even after Ethne had expended such energies, after she had fought so many foes,
after she had laid low a high school gymnasium full of supernatural heavyweights, the raw strength of the Titan's remaining will was overwhelming. It tore at my perceptions, flooding them with random images and smells and sensations. It was like standing in a sandstorm, only instead of inflicting pain, every random grain forced you through an experience, a memory, so disjointed and intense and rapid that there was nothing to focus on, to hold on to. Flash of sensation of summer warmed grass between my toes, plunging into a pool of chilled water in the hour before dawn. An image of watching warmly over a field worked by people with bronze tools. Another of strangling someone to death with my bare hands. And the images doubled, redoubled, multiplied into thousands of separate impressions, all coming at me at once. Memories. These were the substance of Ethneu, the pieces of her that railed against my will. She was going to hammer them into my mind as I tried to complete the binding, sandblast my psyche to pieces with an overwhelming flood of impressions. I had to get to an image, a moment that was mine, me, that was strong enough to hold all the rest together. I found one image. Maggie, holding on to me with all four limbs, her little heart beating against my chest while Mouse leaned against me, a solid presence of utter faithfulness and love. And that was enough. If the Titan shredded away everything else I had, this would be enough to build on. Friends, family, love. I focused on that memory of my girl holding on to me with desperate strength, my fuzzy friend beside us while her father's arms held her safe. The storm of the Titan's will raged, but I found myself standing in the eye of the hurricane with the most quiet, defiant smile that had ever landed on my face. The world came back to me. I could feel the spear in my hands again, the broken rock and concrete beneath my feet. Ethneu writhed and twisted in the center of the circle of campfire light, coming up off the ground as if gravity had suddenly stopped functioning.
"Bound! Bound! Bound!" I called. "Thrice said and done! Be gone!"
The Titan shrieked in outrage. My left eardrum exploded, or maybe imploded. Whatever, it wasn't there anymore. The world turned into one of those barrel rides where they spin so fast you stick to the wall, only I didn't have a wall to lean on. I had the spear of fucking destiny. Thrum, 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 thrum. It was as if I had started some vast and momentous engine.
"Alfred!"
I screamed and kicked the crystal out into the water of the lake. The moment the bloodied crystal hit the water, there was a sound. A deep, deep sound, like a rumbling in earth miles below us. The surface of Lake Michigan went suddenly still, and then began to jump and vibrate like the indicator bars of God's biggest stereo. A light appeared in the water. I don't mean like a spotlight or a glowing aura. This thing was huge, hundreds of yards across, and it came through the water at a speed so great that it couldn't readily be estimated. But it pushed a bow wave ahead of it, a huge one. "Oh, crap," I muttered. In the water, Marcone snapped his head toward the wave, then calmly murmured something. He abruptly zipped through the water as though being pulled by a friendly dolphin and attained the shore.
"Dresden! Go!" I said. "I've got to hold her here."
Marcone gave me a look and said, "Of course you do." He eyed the incoming wave, gold and green and across the entire horizon. Then he muttered something in a language I didn't know, answered himself in the same language and a different voice, and then said in English, "No, I don't have any gopher wood. No one has any gopher wood. I'm not even sure it exists anymore." Then he shook his head, looked at the ground, and started muttering and drawing in power. The wave loomed larger. Ethneu screamed again, but I put my shoulder up against my right ear, so that was fine. There was a hideous smell in the air.
I looked around and saw broken concrete beginning to melt into slurry while Marcone chanted in some harsh-sounding language. A wave loomed up, millions of tons of water coming at us fast. And then the breadth of the wave condensed, intensified. It built higher and higher in the last 100 yards to shore, focused, piling into a curl a city block wide and towering like a skyscraper. For a second, the gold-green tower was poised at apogee, graceful, beautiful. And then eyes opened at the top of the wave. Green, furious, hostile, and implacable eyes. The wave came down. And Demon Reach came down with it, great stony hands the size of pickup trucks outstretched. That vast wall of glowing green water crashed down over the Titan, who screamed once more. And then that huge form, a magical servant of my will, surged through the binding of my will held around the Titan and enfolded her in its vast, implacable form. The Titan fought, but her strength was spent. It was like watching a seal get pulled down by something big and dark and unseen. A desperate struggle with a foregone conclusion. Not because the Titan was strong enough to fight something like Alfred, but because this is what Alfred did. This was the purpose of its creation. Ant lions aren't all that much bigger or stronger than ants, but ant lions kill ants. It is what they do. This is what Alfred did. I saw Demon Reach drag the Titan screaming and thrashing into the pitiless waters of Lake Michigan. I felt it when my will prevailed. Thrum, 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 thrum. The spear quivered in time with my heartbeat, steady and rumbling, a tactile equivalent of a big rig's engine. The rest of the wave that had hammered the Titan back into the water hit us, icy cold despite the glowing light that infused it. Stinking grayness rose around us, and I was thrown into something hard, the sky and the city whirling overhead, and then there was darkness and cold water all around. I started trying to find my way out. I was underwater. There were cold, hard walls and a ceiling. I was in an enclosed space. I was exhausted. My battered body was so bruised and numb I could barely tell when I actually touched something. I tried to summon up some of my will, at least enough to bring some light into my staff or amulet, and just couldn't. There was just nothing there. My tank was on absolute E. I tried to find a way out by feel in the dark, with the water making me colder and slower, with my lungs slowly beginning to burn. Then there were 3 points of violet light that resolved into the eyes and the rune of Thorned Namshu. I felt Marcone thump my shoulder. Then he fumbled at my hand. I took it, and the Baron of Chicago led me through the darkness to an opening in the solid barrier surrounding us. I lost some skin, but I scraped through, kicking weakly at the water, and eventually got my head above it again. Marcone broke the surface at the same time. He started dragging me toward the shore. I peered at what looked like an enormous concrete teacup, I supposed, since it was about the same shape, upended, maybe 12 feet across. What? I asked. The waters were rough, waves surging back and forth, but the beach, such as it was empty, except for us. And a massive form of green-gold light was vanishing, slow and steady, back into the depths of Lake Michigan. Marcone slogged onto the shore and made sure I was able to get out of the water. What? I asked, panting. The hell is that thing? Marcone plopped down on a rock and said, There's no reason a concrete vessel couldn't have handled that wave, structurally speaking. It must have made it too top-heavy, and it rolled on us. Yeah, well, I panted, gasping sweet, sweet air. That's because you suck, and you're an amateur. Who sucks? I didn't see you doing anything about it. Yeah, because I was holding the freaking Titan, I shot back.
I was doing the grown-up stuff.
You just almost killed us both as an unintended side effect of that binding, Marcone snapped, and you call me an amateur.
I saved your life from a titan, I panted, exhausted, and I think I had picked up a couple of cracked ribs, despite the last-second shield of concrete that had risen to stop most of the force of the wave.
You almost drowned us, fake wizard. I just broke down the molecular structure of concrete and then chemically reformed it inside a mold of pure will, saving both our lives from that wave in the process.
Fake, I said. Sad.
Marcone let out a low, weary chuckle. My stomach twitched a lot while breaths went in and out of my exhausted body. We did not laugh together. And he was no less an asshole. But we won.
Chapter 35.
We should move, Marcone said eventually. Without Ethne's will to counter those of the ladies, Corb's forces will break. They'll run for the water, and we are in their path. He was right, but there was no sense letting him feel that way. I was too tired to move. How about you fight them all with your new buddy? Look real good in front of everyone. You first. I started to say something childish, but there was a particularly loud ripple of water from the shoreline, and both of us came up ready to fight. Some of us more drunkenly than others. An ivory sphere, a little bigger than a softball, glowing with sullen fire, tumbled out of the waves and onto the beach. The eye, pulsing with power, throbbing with it, really. Power that could lay gods and monsters low. I glanced aside. Marcone was staring at the eye. It lay approximately equidistant between us, down at the waterline. It might have been 6 inches nearer to me. He turned and looked at me thoughtfully. He looked at the spear. He didn't move or reach for weapons. No demented angelic eyes appeared on his forehead. He just looked at me. I returned the look. I knew what Marcone was. I'd taken his measure, and he hadn't changed. He was, above all things, a dangerous predator. It was simply his nature. And you don't let predators know when you're scared. Because I was. Marcone the gangster had been bad enough. Marcone the supernatural power broker had been nerve-wracking. Marcone the Knight of the Blackened Denarius was a nightmare I had barely considered. But it didn't matter what else you added to it. He was Marcone. And one of these days, he and I would settle things between us. Maybe today, right here. It would be a good time for him. I was exhausted after that binding, and he had to know it. If he acted, he could eliminate me and gain the Spear of Destiny and the Eye of Balor all in an evening. In all this confusion, who was to say what had really happened? The victor, that's who. Marcone hadn't survived as long as he had without being able to read faces. And from the look on his, he'd figured out what had been going on in my head. I'd seen his small, shark-like smile before, but it was more frightening now. Because I wasn't standing outside an aquarium, I was in the bloody desperate water with him, and he was more than large enough to rip me to pieces. He smiled and stared at me without blinking while those cold, pale, green eyes did the math. Evidently, the numbers didn't turn out far enough in his favor to suit him. His smile for a second turned almost human, and he said, "Not today." Water lapped on the shore. Shouts and cries and desperate clicks drifted down to us, seemingly from another world. "Why?" I asked. For a second, a look of contempt touched his face, and then he became pensive. His fingers came to rest lightly against his chest, and then he regarded me more seriously. "Because I am beginning to learn what it means to think in the long term," he replied, his voice serious. "And time favors me. You and I will face one another eventually. But for now,
I think it best you take the eye for safekeeping, wizard.
I scowled. You're just yielding the eye to the White Council?
Do I look like a moron?
Certainly not, Marcone said.
To the Wizard of Chicago.
This was, after all, your kill. By the terms of the Accords, you deserve first claim.
We did it together, I objected warily. Marcone's smile sharpened.
Prove it, he purred. Hero.
He twitched two fingers and vanished behind a veil. And I sat there in the cold and the damp, exhausted, momentarily safe, and certain in the sinking sensation that the future I was facing had suddenly become about 1,000 times more complicated. Footsteps began to sound in the haze nearby, along with desperate clicking noises. I grabbed up the eye and dumped it in my duster's pocket. Then I reached up and unlatched and unscrewed the dagger from the end of my staff, sticking it back in its sheath at my hip. There was a sense of frustration from the weapon as I undid it, but the throbbing power behind the blade eased and quieted. Then I slopped up a veil that would do and shambled back up to the rock and gravel beach to the street level of the city. I staggered to one side and sat down on a bench and watched as the coalition led by Baron Marcone and the Winter Lady drove the Fomor legions from the field, first in a trickle and then in a wave. I was too exhausted to do anything but sit there as the enemy was driven away, and the rest of my team wasn't much better off than I was. Once the defenders had driven the foe to the waterfront, they staggered to an exhausted stop themselves, casting weary cheers and jeers after the fleeing foe, and swiping with exhausted, half-hearted energy at the enemies who were still fleeing past them. It was odd seeing citizens of Chicago, armed with baseball bats and shotguns and whatever else had been at hand, standing shoulder to shoulder with armored warriors of winter, even the high and mighty Xi shouting defiance and scorn in unison at the fleeing foe. And then we heard it all together. Boom, 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 boom. We'd all heard choppers coming before, but not like this. This was magnified tenfold over anything I'd heard from the machines. This sounded more like the weather. Our side immediately began withdrawing from the shoreline, and the enemy broke into a desperate sprint for the water. I saw King Korb and his retinue leading the way, mainly because they blasted to death any of their own people too slow to clear their path and leapt over their bodies. They hit the water maybe 10 seconds before the cavalry came. It was just poetry that the broken overcast had begun to lighten out over the lake, and that the first rays of dawn turned the eastern horizon to a band of gold. The enemy did their best to get away, but the very destruction they'd leveled in order to come ashore laid them bare to the guns of the Apache attack ships that came overhead. Those big cannons under their chins started going chunk, 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 like a thundercloud playing steel percussion. Explosions started ripping through the Fomor as they tried to flee. What came next was every bit as hideous and savage and thorough as anything that had happened that evening, but it was a lot more impersonal. The cavalry unit swept the beach clean, which was an odd turn of phrase to use given what a mess they made of it.